Welcome to Medical Confessions,
your remedy for serious medicine. I'm Jen.
I'm April.
And I'm Scott. Today we're going to be touching on marijuana, why it gives you the munchies, why it's such a controversial thing right now, the pros, the cons, pretty much everything to do with marijuana.
We, kind of embarked on this in a general term, and I felt like it was overwhelming how to decide what direction to go or what to focus on. And it sounds like we all kind of had different bits of it that we took a bite of, but pretty interesting, pretty
it is exciting.
Political.
Very political.
This is a 2018 statistic, but it says 33 states plus D.C. have legalized medical marijuana. Meanwhile, there are now 10 states plus D.C. where recreational weed is legal after 55.89% of Michigan voters said yes to the proposal.
Good for Michigan.
I don't know anything about them, but I was kind of like, oh, Michigan. Isn't that kind of like the one on the map? Isn't that kind of like the one random? Like,
yeah, just in the middle of everywhere. Like, yeah,
they're up by the Canadians.
Itself.
And they're
They've
just
got
like
a fancy bridge you used to have to drive all the way around and reach the other side of the state.
So I just thought that was really interesting that, you know, if you look at it as the map or the article that April has, how many states have adopted it, not just for medicinal, but now just general use.
We work with somebody from Michigan. He's really going to like that you have no idea where that's at.
Oh, I know where Michigan's at.
Oh.
I just meant, like, it's the only one by itself. Like, if you look at the map.
Oh, I see. The only one that is the users versus
right, because if
non-users.
You look at the West Coast, we're all, like, the heathens. Just, like, first ones all the way down. And then now we got some up in the East Coast. But then there's just Michigan, just standalone over there.
Yeah.
Like a little rebel. The way that my study went for this was that it actually looks to me like alcohol is a bigger epidemic or concern. More people addicted, more lives ruined, all that kind of stuff. But yet alcohol is just normal.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Well, I remember being 19. My grandma, she's never hidden the fact that she's a pot smoker.
Oh, okay.
But it's out on her coffee table, and I remember, like, her not hiding it, and I was surprised. And she's like, April, I just want to tell you right now that pot is way more safe than alcohol, and you should just smoke weed instead of drinking.
Oh, wow. When was this?
Oh, when I was, like, 18, 19.
Oh,
okay. I was going to say 8 years old or something.
Oh, no, 2000. Yeah,
like
even before. Oh, yeah, even before. Before it was legalized, like, that was just the thing, you knew.
Trailblazer.
Oh, what's that smell? I know what that smell is,
and
Grandma.
I kind of agree with her. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with alcohol either, but I feel like if somebody, that's your, we'll call it, drink of choice, you know, like some people prefer wine or beer or whiskey, like if you would prefer to do marijuana, I didn't see a lot of things that led me to believe that it's horribly addictive or the gateway drug.
No, I think that's all rumors from the past. Dare Nancy Reagan coming out.
Oh, Nancy.
Oh, I love Nancy.
Cannabis has been used for healing since before the written word. It's been around in Chinese medicine for at least 4,000 years. India's ancient medicine records from Greece in 50 AD and in England's medical text in the 1600s. By the 1800s, doctors in Ireland and the U.S. prescribed cannabis regularly, and Americans considered it so safe that it was marketed to new moms to relieve teething pain in fussy babies.
Oh, wow. Increase their, like, appetite as well.
I love old school medicine when it was, like, prescribing cigarettes for pregnant women and you could get heroin over the counter.
Rubbing whiskey on baby's teeth and letting them smoke.
Those wild times back then. Do whatever you wanted.
Well, and then the backlash came. Reefer Madness, an over-the-top 1936 movie, portrayed marijuana as a
1936?
I've watched a little bit of it. It's pretty funny.
I didn't have time in between,
like,
my
sensationalized
research.
Like,
no, it's like a 1936 film if you're watching the original, but it's just, like, got these pictures in it showing, like, African Americans all bloodshot and look like they're really gonna, like, murder you or something.
Oh,
and, it's just really over the top and
so sensationalized.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah, that word.
Yeah.
Sure, using fancy words on me.
Well, okay, so the movie portrayed the marijuana as a demon drug, driving people insane.
And but yet we were giving meth to our troops.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Sorry.
That came later. I think that was the World War II. That was after the 30s, right?
Yeah, but not much.
No.
Harry Aslinger, the director of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics at the time, drove the point home, calling marijuana the most violent-causing drug in the history of mankind. The anti-pot rhetoric effectively halted medical cannabis research for 40 years.
Yeah, well, it's still there, right? Like, right, it's still Schedule 1.
Yeah, and we know little about it because it's so hard to research.
It's crazy.
Because of that Schedule 1 title.
But meth is Schedule 2, so that's exciting. But that's just on a federal level. Thank goodness some states are getting a little more common sense.
I was reading this Dr. Oren Devinsky. He got the approval to study CBT by the NYU, and his process was apply for approval from the DEA. The DEA then has to go in, inspect where you're going to keep it. You have to have a special alarm, aside from the hospital's alarm, its own alarm system. And the security safe that it had to be held in, they had to bring engineers to make sure the floor wouldn't cave through. And then the hospital...
for CBD oil.
To study CBD. This is a normal practice. And then the DEA comes in and verifies that you did all that your checklist.
I'm just laughing because we bought that for our dog.
I know.
Just walked in a store, bought it, gave it to her. It helped. It was awesome.
Well, and if that guy would have just walked down to the local frat and, you know, the local chemistry majors out there, a botanist is like, you know, studying.
And I understand he's trying to be legitimate his operation.
Yeah. I mean, because of how it's grown is if you want to study it and have a legitimized study, you have to get it from the legitimized growers, and that's all tracked. And so it's extremely difficult if you want it, the stamp of approval from basically...
Well, yeah, and federal dollars, right? Yeah. That funds a ton of research, and you can't get it for Schedule I drugs. So that's unfortunate. Well, unless you go through these processes that will take forever. It's interesting.
Yeah. Let's go back to why people want to... We're talking about the medical side of it, but people want to engage in this drug for recreational.
Yeah.
Why? What do people like about marijuana? What does it do to you?
We want to talk about the what it's doing in the body.
Yeah. Well, and I think it leads to the kind of the funny things like the the munchies and the you know, giggles or whatever else that people associate with it.
Let's just say the caveat is it is extremely new research. There's not a lot of long-term studies that have been out there. There's tons of anecdotal stuff. We've figured out actually how our own endocannabinoid system works by studying how THC affects the body. We were able to then come up with these new receptors, find them and map them in the brain because we were trying to figure out why that's working. And then, oh, look, the body does that naturally anyway. So marijuana in general has got over 85 different cannabinoid molecules in it or different...
Cannabinoid?
Yes.
Oh.
Cannabinoid?
I thought it was cannabinoid.
Cannabinoid. It is
cannabinoid. Okay. Sorry.
And what is the other one? The CBD... It's a cannabidiol or something?
Yeah, CBD is cannabidiol, and then THC is the tetrahydrocannabinol.
Okay.
So basically a bunch of just words together that say we're going to affect the endocannabinoid system in your brain. So these specific receptors that we're hitting with that, there are quite a few that actually, because there's so many different molecules in marijuana itself, and it is such a new thing to research, nobody really knows what it's all doing, all encompassing. They take little bits of it and say the THC portions and the CBD portions, but overall it's really not well studied. So the true long-term effects aren't there, but we'll talk about what we do know. Some of the areas of the brain that it's affecting are going to affect things like emotion, memory, pain sensitivity, and appetite. The specific receptors are CB1 and CB2. Those are going to be the main, I guess, symptom-causing receptors, if you want to call them symptoms or, you know, effects, whatever. But it can also affect other things. Those receptors are called G-protein-coupled receptors. There are lots of G-protein-coupled receptors throughout the body that marijuana will affect, but it's CB1, CB2 we'll primarily be talking about. It also affects quite a bit of other like ion channels, like several different types of potassium channels, alpha 7 nicotinic receptors, which, you know, is more like a nicotine. People think of nicotinic receptors, you know, having to do with nicotine. And then this particular receptor, if you guys remember the transient receptor protein vanilloid class, we've talked about it.
I remember the name.
Capsaicin.
That's twice. I need to like commit that one to memory.
Well, I think we've talked about that specific receptor chapter in like four different episodes.
Right, right. And I still don't remember it when you tell me. I know the name, but
it's like the promiscuous receptor of the body. I think it's affected by almost everything.
Well, I like to forget about it because that wasn't a fun time for me.
Several college kids. That same analogy. Anyway, so we're going to talk about CB1, CB2 specifically, because those are the ones that's giving you the most of the symptoms. So when we're talking about the results of smoking marijuana or taking it or eating it or however you're going to ingest it, it stimulates quite a few different things in your body. So one of the first things, it stimulates your nucleus accumbens. It's a part of your brain that releases dopamine. So that makes you feel good. So it's the same neurotransmitter that, runners are trying to get that high from, cocaine, any other drug really out there.
Like long distance runners and cokeheads.
Like, forget about
anything,
the rest.
Anything in between.
So it stimulates that to release dopamine. It also acts on your hypothalamus to increase the a hormone called ghrelin. Ghrelin will actually increase your hunger, so you feel kind of hungry. It'll also...
I do not need marijuana for that.
Just hungry in general?
Hungry all the time.
One of the cool new studies that I actually read the most up on, because I just liked the process that they went to prove this, but they were able to take mice and prove that your main olfactory bulb, which is in your nose, it helps you smell. Well, the CB1 gets stimulated by THC, and it actually effectively makes you smell better. So smell and taste are pretty interchangeable, because when you're chewing, you're taking a little air turbulence and getting it up there into your nose, and then that will give you the ability to taste complex flavors. Without that, you would only actually taste the five normal flavors, like bittersweet, salty, umami. But because this main olfactory bulb gets stimulated, you're smelling better. And so what they did was they took a bunch of mice and they went ahead and stimulated that. And those mice, they were all over. They were smelling the crap out of their food and they were eating the crap out of it compared to the mice who they had genetically modified to not have these CB1 receptors. And then...
I feel bad for like lab animals, but that was probably fun to watch. They're probably like
them.
Cookie Monster and stuff. They're like, bah, bah, bah.
This is so good.
Best pellets ever.
Bananas, I think, was one of the main things. Bananas and I think oranges, I think I saw in there a couple of...
Is it my birthday?
I feel bad for the ones who got the genetically modified not to have that, because what then they also did was to be able to show that, the body does this naturally. They starved the mice for about 24 hours. And interestingly enough, their brains produced endocannabinoids just like you would if you smoked marijuana. So basically the act of being starved gives you the same results of smoking marijuana. Things like increased hunger, you can taste things better.
Hmm.
So that's, why you're giving you the munchies.
I could see that because... when I've gone long periods stuck at work or whatever, not eaten, like it doesn't matter what you eat. It tastes amazing.
Yeah.
I feel like it could be like,
that's true, yeah.
Whatever, cruddy sandwich. You're like, oh gosh, so good.
So the sad part about that was they took the genetically modified ones, starved them, and then nothing, right? Like they were just normal. I'm thinking, oh, poor mice starving.
Yeah.
And they don't even like get enjoyment out of eating anymore.
Right.
That sucks. Tough to be a lab rat.
Right.
Pun intended. Anyway, so those are just some of the effects that it's having in the body. So then you can see if you stimulate this, of course, it gives you the feel-good feelings because of the dopamine. It gives you the hunger feelings because of the ghrelin. Things taste better because you can smell better. So see, these are some of the common things people talk about when they get high.
So negative side effects then from being high would be?
Yeah, so same as anything that's going to alter your mental status, right? Don't drive. The short-term problems that come with THC are going to be impaired short-term memory. That's known with marijuana.
While you're high,
correct.
Okay. Yeah.
So you have a less chance to be able to learn new things because your short-term memory is not going to be able to turn into long-term memory.
Right.
You have impaired emotional skills and motor skills. So
emotional and motor?
Yeah. So it's affecting the portions of your brain that deal with emotion. So, amygdala would be like one of those. And motor skills too, altered judgment, obviously. And then super high doses, you can actually get paranoia and psychoses with those sorts of things. I don't know if you guys have ever been...
Increased heart rate.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would think, I guess I always kind of thought of it like a depressive.
So some studies are showing it's slowing down dromotropy, so that speed of conduction of a nerve impulse. But no, it because it's hitting other receptors, then you'll actually get an increase in your heart rate. It's kind of known. So part of the problem here is we're talking about like a plant that's got 85 different things in it.
Right.
We only know what a few do. We just kind of know what the reactions are because we haven't studied it yet, but we do know that it does cause an increase in heart rate.
So what about long-term? long-term usage and negative effects from that. And the reason I say that is because we've all seen the movies where there's, like, you know, the surfer pothead who seems slow and dumb and...
Cheech and Chong.
Right. And, you know, how much validity is there to that? Or are there any negative side effects to long-term? And the reason that I'm questioning is because one of the articles I read that talked about the benefits, they talk about chronic pain, depression, you know, stress and anxiety, even cancer, multiple sclerosis, epilepsy, all these really obvious ones. Then when it came to the part of the article, and this was a medical journal, like it wasn't a skewed, you know, Medical News Today, but okay. They were reporting on a study that was done. But then what are the health risks? Mental problems. And that was specifically with people that already had pre-existing, so schizophrenia, bipolar, and then testicular cancer. Have you heard that one before?
That it helps with this?
No, this is a negative side effect. So they're actually saying that the Academies of Sciences found some evidence to suggest that an increased risk for slow-growing seminoma subtype of testicular cancer, which I thought was interesting. I haven't looked into that yet. Respiratory disease, and that one is even says it is unclear. It even states, you know, and that's it. Like, that's their negatives. And I'm like, if that's your list of negatives, it's really, you know, strange to me. And again, it doesn't address the long-term usage. So are there any negative effects to long-term usage?
Well, and here's where we're going to just be talking about maybe and most likelies, because there really
could be
because there really isn't.
Which you probably hate.
Evidence-based medicine
like
is not there. So
Scott's worst nightmare.
So I assumed that question was going to come up. So that was the thing I was looking up this morning and trying to find some objective, peer-reviewed, evidence-based
Cochrane review
or study or something, right? God, I love those Cochrane folks. But there really wasn't one. Like, you go to the CDC and you go to the, you know, National Institute of Health. Well, obviously, they're going to toe the political Schedule 1 line. So there really wasn't one. The one that I found that did the best job, I think, of explaining these are what we think could be the problems, and but these are the limitations of what we think as well, came out of a New England Journal of Medicine article in 2008. So it's a little bit old, about 10 years old now. But most of them are just kind of toting one line or the other, just because there hasn't been these long-term studies yet to really say what is going to go wrong.
The history of this is so old. It's so funny.
Time magazine did a special on the marijuana movement. So I picked up the magazine, and every single article in here is amazing. Super fascinating and interesting to read. What every single specialist, scientist, researcher is saying is it's incredible that it's been around for so long, yet we know so little about it.
Right.
And every single study that says it helps with XYZ is, but there needs to be more research.
Right.
That's what they all end with.
Well, and so this one was some pretty known things, like the younger you are starting to use it, the more effects you're going to have long term, obviously, because it's a developing body, things like that.
And that makes sense
to me. So this particular one was looking at kids 12 years and older, saying basically the younger you are, the better chance you're going to have these problems. So some of the problems that they were saying was that there is some evidence that the neurons in your body don't create as many connections as they would without it. Synapses, yes.
Just wanted to help you out today. I'm here for you, Scott.
Well, I appreciate it. Because I can't even read my own notes, to be honest.
They even did a study for mothers who smoke pot. And I knew a girl.
Like, not pregnant, but moms.
No, pregnant moms.
Pregnant moms
who smoked. And I actually knew a female who, like, it was actually the first time I'd seen a mother or pregnant woman smoking, but she smoked all throughout both her pregnancies. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh. you know, she was fine with it, but the study in this magazine was that they did a study with moms who smoked when they were pregnant versus moms who didn't, and the effects that they had on their child. And I didn't care enough to write the notes on it, but there were significant differences of the children's attention span versus some of their other things, their focus, their reading. And but I don't know, how can you like then just say, oh, it's because your mom smoked weed when
they have different genetics and
multiple kids have
like, I would think, and I'm going to be judgy here, but most behaviors when you're pregnant, even if they're completely normal and healthy when you're not pregnant, I mean, you even can't even take over-the-counter, you know, pain relief a lot of times. So to me, I'm looking at it going, well, just like, she was just like, whatever, I'm just going to do it. So what if she had kind of a carefree attitude? She's more relaxed. Her genetics are, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Her attention span, maybe she's a little bit more chill about the world. And so maybe she passes that on to her kids. And then you get the overly conservative, you know, whatever.
The point of the developing brain. As a young child, your brain's still developing into your, like, mid-20s, right?
Yeah, so your white matter is not truly formed until, like, 30.
Okay.
I think the overall bird's eye view of the thing is your body's trying to keep everything in homeostasis. So if you do a lot of any one thing, it's going to develop itself based on that one thing, and that's going to be different than what it would otherwise. And are those things going to then be bad long-term? And we don't know yet.
Right.
But what we can say is things are kind of pointing to, yes, they can be. So some of the things that this particular study in the New England Journal of Medicine was talking about is those long-term risk of addiction was one, although they pointed out that they couldn't really actually isolate marijuana in and of itself compared to the other things those people were also doing to become more prone to addiction in general.
Right.
So abnormal brain development was one they talked about because they could see these effects like in the hippocampus, for example. So another thing was increase in the risk of anxiety and depression the younger you used the marijuana, and then a decrease in your school performance. All of those seems pretty common sense. If you use a marijuana a lot, of course, so you're not going to be studying and your short-term memory's
not going to work. That's what I was going to say is which came first. You know, when I was in high school, it's not that the pot smokers were bad kids. They were the typically ones that were just hanging out with groups after school and maybe not in sports, maybe not in the whatever. So which behavior became which behavior?
Well, and the one that I think has the most evidence for just based on common sense is smoking marijuana, right? You're going to get increased chance of lung cancer, increased chance of respiratory problems. It's just kind of known that chronic smokers generally produce more phlegm, they have more coughs, things like that.
Right.
And I wasn't able to find a study that looked at specifically marijuana smoking versus cigarette smoking and the incidence of lung cancer later on because, well, no long-term studies, but it does make sense that it's just like smoking cigarettes. You got a lot of unburned carcinogens you're taking in. So those products of combustion are going to cause an increased chance of cancer. So that testicular cancer thing, I could probably see that because if you're smoking it. But then the question becomes, well, what about if you're eating it?
Because they have a dime bag in their pocket and it's right up next to them.
And it's just seeping in osmosis style.
Jess and I brought that up too because we actually know some people that have went back strictly to the flower since you're like, oh, but what if they eat it? And it's like the people we know that have gone straight back to the flower is because it's like, oh yeah, we were doing the oils or the vaping or edibles, but then we thought about it and it's like, how natural is that? Because they have to refine that all out to put it in these things when really it's just the natural bud that we wanted in the first place. I think there's like that went from, oh, look at all these great things we can do with it. But then now I'm seeing a shift in, we're just going to go back and do the regular old flower.
Well, and the product isn't now what it was years ago, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I compare it to, like Coors Light to like high octane IPA is what I'm thinking.
Or like, what was that one? Four Loko.
Yeah, in the 1960s, the THC content in a typical plant ranged anywhere from 4 to 7%. But now that they're crossbreeding and they're having sophistication with their growing processes, the average concentration is 12 to 29% if you consume it the traditional way by burning and inhaling the dry leaf. Dabs or oils.
What is a dab?
That's going to be, I've seen them, they're just on the like little, there's little dabs of oil, basically.
Yeah.
And then they can just stick it on their tongue or whatever.
Oh, so it's kind of like an edible type of a thing.
Yeah,
it's an extract from the leaf concentrated into a wax or an oil, and then you smoke it. It can increase the concentration to 80% THC. At that point, you're eliminating the CBD qualities of the medical properties that people are touting for marijuana, and you're really stripping away everything health-wise and forming a habit-forming chemical at that point.
And that makes sense to me. So if you think about like when you're told, hey, a glass of red wine is good for you. And so all of the reasons that that's good, the moment you drink the whole bottle, you're probably counteracting all the goods that. So same idea, too much THC diminishes the overall good properties of.
Yeah, because if you breed it for just the THC, you're going to breed out the other stuff. A doc who got interviewed, he's been doing a lot of the marijuana research, and they were asking him a bunch of questions about the differences between like these high THC contents and CBD contents and things like that, and basically said that same thing, is that you know, if you're going to breed just for specifically THC, you're going to get less CBD. The big ones they look at are the THC and the CBD, but there's a lot of other medical benefits in marijuana that no one ever looks at. And so one of the examples he gave was just this societal perception that indica and sativa plants will produce a different type of high. And his point was, well, how do you know? Because the plant, an indica plant, can be then bred to produce more THC and less CBD, and so can a sativa plant. So is the plants really that much different?
Right.
They're probably not. It's probably just the breeding process and what was left over from that.
So an article that I read, that I saw the title and I liked what it suggests, it says, a new study finds marijuana safer than alcohol or tobacco. It goes on to say that scientists have confirmed what earlier studies have indicated. Alcohol is the deadliest, while marijuana is the least risky. According to the study, at the individual level, booze presents the highest risk of death, followed by nicotine, cocaine, and heroin, suggesting the risks of alcohol consumption have likely been underestimated in the past. Marijuana was found to be significantly less deadly and sat on the other end of the spectrum, in agreement with the previous research, which has consistently ranked it as the safest recreational drug. Again, I just thought that was really interesting, considering the length of time that we've known it to be available, the limited studies, you know, the political craziness that's going on right now with it becoming legalized. So what do you think about that, Scott?
Well, right, wrong, or indifferent. Whatever you think about the recreational side of it, that's a different topic. If we're strictly talking medical benefits, it doesn't need to be on the Schedule I drug. I've never met a doc, don't know anybody who practices medicine that says it shouldn't be. The only people who say, or that it should be on there, the only people who say, yes, it should still be on the Schedule I drug are politicians.
Right.
And not the actual clinicians. So set aside recreational, there are so many known medical benefits, if you define that benefit as some way to adjust physiology to help someone. Things like glaucoma and nausea, chronic pain, inflammation, like you mentioned, epilepsy and multiple sclerosis, all of these like truly debilitating things, and you know, AIDS associated anorexia, and just appetite stuff for people with cancer, and like all of these things that, yeah, you know, this would really help out.
Right.
And the fact that people aren't able to study it is kind of hindering us, because maybe, who knows, maybe that one of these, you know, over 85 chemicals, if you adjust a specific receptor site long term, and I'm just going to throw this out there because it's not true, but maybe it'll cure cancer, right?
Like, right.
Who knows?
The Dalai Lama supports it for medical purposes.
So it's
he does. Just, and how can you argue that?
I mean, come on.
But yeah, so that, I mean, now if you want to get onto the recreational side of it, well, I kind of think the same thing. If you're using it appropriately, I think it's way better than some of these other ones that are legal out there.
Yeah.
But when it comes to recreational, it's like anything else. Use it appropriately. Everything in moderation.
Right.
Don't drink and drive. Don't smoke it while you're pregnant. I mean, the stuff that you're like, you know,
you definitely
shouldn't be doing that. But if you're using it responsibly, I don't see any difference between any of the other things that alter a person.
Yeah, and I agree, alcohol is more dangerous.
And it makes sense. I talked to Scott before this episode, and I know families that there's several members of the family, like it's genetic. It's almost like, oh, well, Uncle Bob was an alcoholic, and so was Angie. You know, like it's like normal. And then you think about all the bad things that happen, even on a really basic level, like maybe not non-addicted people, you know, non-alcoholics, but they end up pregnant, they end up wrecking their cars, they end up, you know, with one night stay. Like there's so many horrible things that happen, and yet alcohol's totally
I had
fine.
My first semi-proud, I don't know if I should say proud moment, but I was an alcoholic. I made horrible decisions all the time, and Jess was always my voice of reason, and I get pissed off at him. I'd be like, duh, you're stupid, you're cramping my fun, like you're such a Debbie Downer, you know. I had these awesome ideas that were terrible ideas when I was drinking, but...
You have those ideas when you're sober, for
well,
the record.
For the record. Amplified, okay, if you introduce
I can't even imagine.
Alcohol.
I can't even imagine, because you sober is freaking nuts.
So, you know, in the past, there was a time that I was high, and Jess actually said, oh, we should hop on the motorcycles and cruise down to the neighbors and hop in their hot tub. I'm like... no, that is the worst idea. Right now, I'm impaired. Like, I cannot do that. But it stopped me dead in my tracks, because had I been drinking even like 6 beers, I would have been the one like, let's do this. Oh. I would have rode down the street so naked on a motorcycle and skinny dipped and then went back home. I'm more self-aware. And I was like, wow, I just did something super responsible.
Maybe good you for should me. Be smoking pot all the time, April. Okay, my next question is that neighbor, was that neighbor me?
Yeah.
Oh, God. You just show up. I'm like, there's April and Jess in our hot tub.
But you wouldn't have thought a thing of it, right? Like, naked April in the hot tub? That's just April. You, go to bed.
I probably would have been like, she's sober.
You have no idea how thankful you are that I'm not drinking. I feel like I'm more self-aware.
Well, isn't Jess? That a side effect of marriage? Like, what is it?
No, Scott said something that you're less
emotional.
Oh, man, it shuts down.
No,
the
it affects it one way or the other, right? Everybody's different. Okay. How it affects it is just affecting emotions
but
in general.
I was thinking about, and this is probably stereotypical, but like people being paranoid. Mm-hmm. Oh. So is there a part of that? You know, not paranoid like I'm going to get in trouble because it's legal and you're an adult and all that. So there isn't the paranoia of I'm doing something wrong, but paranoia of like I'm not going to mess this up. I'm not, you know, like maybe there was a part of it maybe on marijuana. You do make better decisions because you have a level of not wanting to cause problems or...
I don't know. I don't... I mean, that was just more of a... No, that's dangerous. That's... Don't do that. Like, you're stupid. Like, you're I thought... I'm like,
who am I?
I can't believe that was even a thought of yours.
And Jess is like, where's April?
Yeah. Where are you? It stopped me. I was like, oh my God, I just... That was... I was the voice of reason.
That mark never this day happened. Down. Put it on the calendar.
Yeah. And I'm more self-aware is like if I say something to Jess that's kind of like edgy or snarky or just kind of bitchy. Like,
yeah.
If I were high and said that, there's been a couple times where I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I was just being a super jerk. Like, I'm more lovable. Like,
wow.
Like, I'm sorry that I talked to you like that. That was rude.
That's funny. Well, and I also, from a different viewpoint, like, that I call it that middle road. Like, somebody who has chronic problems and would probably benefit from this, it doesn't sound like there's a lot of negative effects to after a use. It's not like the negative effects will follow this person 6 hours later. And so it always baffles me when somebody has arthritis or chronic back pain or whatever, when they never consider trying this, even go on to meet with their doc and get put on like opioids for pain management and not just try it to see if it actually does alleviate their problems. Like, it kind of baffles me because I think I don't know. I don't know what people are scared of as far as the addiction part of it or it's hard for me to
process.
Reefer
madness.
Yeah.
It must be. But I just think like if I continually had a problem with my left hip and it bothered me all the time and I was taking ibuprofen and aggravating the hole that the capsaicin put in my stomach, like all of those things, I think it would be really hard for me to not make sense of trying this to see if it helped with my chronic problem.
Well, and especially since we know that it's got anti-inflammatory properties and its half-life is so long. You talk about opiates, their half-life's what, 4 or 6 hours?
Right.
Not very long. I mean, the half-life of this for its effects that you can see, like, you know, your highs, they don't last crazy long amounts of time.
Right.
But you can actually see effects on receptor sites for weeks later, and it sticks around for a long time.
Right.
I think anybody who gets drug tested in the military knows you probably better not smoke pot anytime in the next month because you're going to come up on positive, you know?
Right.
Because it just lasts a lot longer. So if you are getting these effects, how long can they last and how much less than do you need to get the desired effect? It seems like it's going to be way better than anything else.
Well, there is a study done by the University of Michigan that found patients using medical cannabis to control chronic pain reported 64% reduction in their use of opioids. And several studies, including one published in the Journal of American Medical Association, showed that opioid overdoses are as much as 25% less common in the states where medical marijuana is legal.
Mm. That's interesting.
Well, and I think, yeah, at the end of the day, we just need to study it more. Let's take it off the schedule one, see what the long-term effects are, because who knows? Maybe your chance of cancer goes up astronomically. Like, you know, everybody used to get in a tanning bed, and now you know just one dose, you're going to get skin cancer most likely. So,
great.
But, you know, who knows, right? Like, the point is we don't know. But, boy, it sure seems promising.
They're doing a study in Israel right now with children with autism that are showing promising results. Experts are stressing that more research is needed, but in regards to the dangerous side effects that more potent medication would have for
those. So are they doing CBD oil or are they doing...
Yes, CBD.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the one,
or limited.
I think that's the stigma, is that like everybody focuses on the THC. We can get rid of that portion, because if you got rid of the CBD side, what's the THC side actually doing for you? Not a ton,
right?
Really, like on the medicinal side of things, other than maybe some, you know, chronic pain stuff and some of the, you know, psychological stuff. But if you do separate out the CBD, it's fantastic.
And I'm sorry, I should have prefaced the Michigan study. That was CBD. Most of my the times was CBD. The CBD medical related stuff.
Right.
So they didn't focus on the THC high portion of anything.
Well, and the best part of that is if you are taking just the CBD, take it at work, drive. You've got no altered mental status whatever. It's just like an ibuprofen or whatever.
One word of caution, since we do live in Washington and it is used recreational, I don't know how many children you've seen who have gotten into their parents' stash, but it happens.
Oh, yeah.
Research looking at one children's hospital in Colorado before and after legalization found that 34% increase between 2009 and 2015 in calls to poison control for accidental exposures to kids under 10, and an increase in emergency room visits with 35% increase of causes serious enough to require hospitalization.
Oh, wow.
So,
well, they had
that's
the same,
a little,
they,
that's sad.
It is sad. And they also had like similar issues with like vape pens, kids drinking the liquid that they, like when those got popular, because kids are seeing them and thinking, and the smell, a lot
that
of times. So same kind of thing, just be responsible.
I'd be way more nervous about the nicotine than I would the marijuana. Oof.
Like that little kid in India that was smoking all those cigarettes. Do you remember that?
No.
Oh, it was like a YouTube video where this little kid was sitting in, it was almost like a sideshow or like, you know, but he was just smoking massive quantities and he was like 3. Oh, yeah. You'll have to Google it. Apparently now he's nicotine free and he's probably like 15 now or whatever. But yeah, pretty sad.
It's just like, if you're going to have that, put it up safe, away from kids, treat it like
no different than guns or any other dangerous items. Lock them up.
Pot and guns, boy. That's a good American controversy. Good American topics, right?
I was thinking alcohol. Like most people have a liquor cabinet.
Well, no, I'm using the extreme. Like treat it like you would the worst possible scenario for your children to come across something that they shouldn't, and don't treat it any different. Just lock it up.
I'm really interested because when you're thumbing through that, it said your pet on pot.
Yeah, there are so many awesome articles in this magazine.
I've never done this and I don't even really have a pet, so I couldn't, but it would be really funny to see a really stoned animal.
Well, and again, CBD
is
using
what they're talking about.
The CBD
oil
for
your
pet, Scott. Your mind automatically goes to getting high as shit.
Yeah. And he's like the sadistic, like, you know, lab animal, you know, like he wants to see what happens.
You see what they did to these rats? I mean, goodness.
Yeah, well, and we put our dog on it. We had an older lab who had bad joints and stuff and could hardly get around, but otherwise was just a, you know, joyful dog. And we put her on it and it was a notable difference. But as soon as we started giving it to her, within a couple days, she's up going for walks with us. And so it definitely works, but we weren't blowing pot smoke at her face though. Scott. So bottom line, we need to do more studies, right? Real promise here with marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Helps a lot of people, can be used safely, everything in moderation.
Seems like it.
Well, good. Well, if you like what you saw her today, check out our podcast or YouTube.
Or visit our website, medicalconfessions.com.